glad you've joined us for this episode of Anabaptist Perspectives.
I'm here in York, Pennsylvania with Clayton Schenck, and you started a school here in the city of York, Pennsylvania. I think there's also a church you've been heavily involved with for the last while. Can you just start by telling us some about this city? What unique aspects does it have? What makes this city really tick?
Well, York, like many other inner city, inland cities, is a dying city. That is, it's declining in population. Your cities like the port cities, New York and Philadelphia, are growing, but cities that have space to expand and build outside the city, they're mushrooming out there, the urban flight. Now, some of that is renewing itself, and they're coming back, and there's the movement to try to rebuild the downtowns. But at one point, York had 60,000 people, and today there are 43,000 people.
Whoa.
And so Caterpillar, Alice Chalmers, Mack, all of those manufacturing jobs have more or less disappeared. Harley-Davidson's still here. But a lot of the manufacturing jobs have left York. So that's sort of an overview quickly.
Okay, so tell me about, how long have you lived here? When did you move, and why? Why did you come?
So in early 80s, when I was born in 60, so in 80 I was 20 years old, and I wanted to do BS somewhere. I wanted to figure out how to serve the Lord, and I volunteered my time, actually, at the Lancaster radio station. It's now called WJTL, but back then it was WPTG, and I served my 9 months of VS as a evening board operator, and I had a program there, Children's Good Night program. I played the Moody stories.
No kidding. Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that.
One of the stories I played was Dwight Moody's story. And when he became a Christian, he wanted to teach Sunday school class. I didn't have a Sunday school class for him. So he said, well, if you let me find the boys, will you give me a room? And they agreed. So eventually he had four rows that he rented, and he had filled up with boys, and he had his own boys' school, or boys' Sunday school. So they had 2 weeks of summer Bible school here, and my girlfriend, now my wife, was one of the Bible school teachers. And Monday night was my night off from the radio, and so I came along with her, and she had no scholars, fourth grade. Nobody showed up that night. So she said, oh, should we just go to the adult class? I said, no, let's do what Dwight Moody did. And so we went down the streets and went around, are you in fourth grade? You in fourth grade? You in fourth grade? You in fourth grade? And so we, by the end of the 2 weeks, she had the biggest class. She had 12 fourth graders. And they said, we got to get that guy here. And we over there. And so they started hounding me. Will you come to York? Come to York. Come to York. And they don't realize all I was doing was what I learned from somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not very original in many things. I hear from other people, and I say, well, I just did what Dwight Moody did. So that was July. And then I started coming the first Sunday in February of 83. So I agreed to come for 1 year. Actually, they asked, will you come for 6 months? Just come for 6 months. So that's all I agreed to, was 6 months. I've been here for 35 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay, so there was an existing ministry here that you were able to plug into?
That's correct.
Okay.
So Tidings of Peace Mennonite Church started in 54.
Oh, wow.
1954 was the first. They had 2 years of Sunday summer, like Sunday school in the afternoons for 2 years, and then in 54 they had their first official service.
Okay.
And so I wasn't born yet. So I'm actually the fourth pastor. So there was a number of men who came before me, and so I was picking up a ministry that was already already gone. And I came as a Sunday school teacher, and then summer Bible school superintendent, and when they talked about ordination, I was ordained pastor. So we were, I started coming February of 83, and I, we were married December of 83. So we've been here all our married life, but we didn't move in. We were living in Lancaster County. We moved in on my birthday of 85, June 28th of 85.
You've been here a while then.
That's
really neat. And this is right here in the school that, did you help start this school then? Was this here already?
The church was up the street. The church building was there. And this was a building that was a handicap, a daycare center for handicapped adults. Mm-hmm. So like Friendship Community over in Lancaster, where you take care of special needs adults. Well, they had an open house, and I came through and I said, if you ever want to sell, mm-hmm. I'd like to have a school someday. I'd like to start a school. Jay Fox from Reading was encouraging us to get a school sure. started and telling us the advantages of a school. And so he called me one day and he said, hey, we're going to move out. You may assume the mortgage. Just take over the mortgage and you can have the building. $70,000. Wow. And I said, well, it's very kind of you, but we're not going to go in debt. We're just not going to go in debt. And so we'll have to pass up the offer. Well, a year and a half later, he called and said, my tax accountant tells me I can give you the building at half price, and so give me $30,000 or $35,000, you can have it. And I said, do I get to choose which one of those two? He said, of course. You know. I said, well, that's very kind and generous, but no, we're not going to go in debt, so I can't take it. So then in July of 94, well, before that, we decided that by July 1st, if we have $5,000 in a fund for the school, and we have three students and one teacher, we'll start this year. But July 1st is the day, is the year that we're gonna start. So that was sort of the fleece, you know, those three things by July 1st. July 1st, we had no money, no teachers, no students. So I was like, okay, well, forget that. Well, on July 3rd, he called back and he said, I don't want that building for one more year. It's a headache. You may have it. Just take it. If you pay closing costs, you may have the building. I said, I'm very, very interested. Yes, indeed.
Whoa.
So, praise God, right? We got the building. Now.
And here you are today.
But what's interesting
is, I did not know that.
Just because somebody offers you something free doesn't mean it's cheap. Yeah. And so it took till October for the congregation to accept the building and to say, oh, yes, okay, well, we'll take it. The timing was so critical because we had said July 1st, if we have these things ready, and he called July 3rd. Now, if he had called 2 days before July, you know, June 28th, I would have pushed really hard. I was like, oh, you know, we got a building. But God wanted us to wait. And so we opened in the beginning of 95. Okay. And so here we are. We had five students, and we rearranged the building, had to cover up all the asbestos and all the stuff to make it a school building. And then God continued to provide. The building next door, the lady, as soon as she found out we were having a school, she's like, all right, I'm moving out. There's no way I'm going to be beside a school. Forget it. But she didn't. She still stayed here. And when she died, her lawyer called me and said, in her will, she has given you first right of refusal, and so you may buy the building for 25. And I said, well, we're not going in debt. We're not going to go into debt. And so it went up for sheriff sale eventually, tax bill and stuff. And the congregation had told me, you may go $10,000, we have that money on hand, you go up to $10,000, no more. And the bank that forced it into sheriff sale bid the cost of the sheriff, $859 or whatever. And so I said, $1,000. And right away I said, $10,000. Well, then I couldn't do anything, right? $10,000. She went up to $10,000. I was done. So so after the meeting was over, I went right up to her. I said, hey, I really want that building, but $10,000 was all I could do. I couldn't go any higher. And she said, well, here's the number, call this person. So somebody down in Texas, I got him on the phone. I said, I really want that building. I'm authorized to give you $10,000. Is there any way you can sell it to me for $10,000? And she said, can't you do $15,000? I said, oh, it'll take an act of Congress. I got to go back through and I got to do congregational. Do all this. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, she said, all right, take it for $10,000.
Okay. No kidding. So, and that's how you, and now you, that's, housing for your teachers.
That's where the
now.
Guys stay. The guys' house. And the across the street, we got that one for $6,000 for the teachers. We got another one for $1. And so, you know, God is just really good. And so we have this little enclave. You know, we have a church building, a school building, three houses. My son owns a house on the block.
That's hard. That's really, really neat. It's like it's a phrase I had when I was talking to Patrick Matthews, another interview we did there in Chambersburg. It's like a little embassy of light, you know, right here, you know, where you set aside a place for God's kingdom. That's really cool. One question I had too was like, how has this neighborhood received you? I'm sure it's been a progression. You've been here for quite a while, but yeah, talk about that a little.
Well, you're always going to have some who are just real happy to see you, and some who are like, what's going on here? You know, one of the I was at a ministers' conference out in Michigan, and the speaker was encouraging us to serve. The Bible says, if you want to be servant of all, if you want to be great in God's kingdom, learn to be servant of all. And so the way he encouraged us to do that is to go to the mayor. If you can serve the mayor, you serve the whole city. And so go directly to the mayor and say, how can we serve you? And then you have served the whole city. You've served all. And so I contacted our mayor at that time, and I said, what can we do to serve you? And he said, well, here's the name of our parks department. So I called Alan, and he said, well, I'll get you in charge of Casey. Casey will take care of it. So Casey said, well, we have a park fence that needs painted. Will you paint it? Sure. And he came back, what can we do next? Well, there's a pavilion there. One of the pavilions of the park has a lot of graffiti. Could you cover up the graffiti? Sure. So they provided the paint. We did the labor. And we did whatever projects they asked us to do. So one day there was a group of homeschoolers coming over from Lancaster. They said, we want to serve the city. What can we do? And I called Casey. And she said, well, there's this one railroad bed. It's terrible, full of trash. If you could just clean it up. So we got 30, 40 bags of trash out of there. And so we got this idea. You know, there's probably other places in the city that have trash too. And so we started the trash-a-thon. And we would go and pick up trash and see how much. The first year, I think we got 1,100 pounds of trash or something like that. And so we started getting sponsors. You know, will you sponsor so much per ton of trash? And the city provided the trash truck, so it didn't cost us anything. We'd have to go buy some bags. And then we would see these vacant lots. And anytime you have a vacant lot, people start putting trash on there. And so we'd go and attack a place that was years of trash. And we'd go and this house is empty, and we'd go get the backyard and clean it up. They're hard to find anymore, those places that have that trash, because year after year after year, you know, we're out, we want trash, we want tonnage, you know, tonnage. So this past year we picked up 24 tons of trash.
24?
3 hours. Whoa. 3 hours time.
Right. How many people did you have?
So about 150 people.
See, now that is just amazing. Like, wouldn't that be so cool to see that happening all across America in different cities where churches like, hey, we're going to serve this city. And something like that is so tangible and so real. Like, I mean, who wouldn't want you cleaning up a city, literally, like, taking track? That is really neat.
So that so the neighbors really like us, right?
Yeah.
On that regard, right? Because we're cleaning up trash, or we're going out here and we're getting things. They're like, oh, this is wonderful, wonderful. We like science and peace. So another illustration would be, you know, there's lots of people who are happy for us here. Or, you know, the block's better, it's more stable, whatever. But our mayor, a few mayors back, was passed an ordinance for you could not discriminate on the basis of homosexuality, right? In housing. If you're going to rent to somebody, you can't discriminate age, gender, you know, race, all that, or sexual orientation. And so we published a tract called What Does God Say About Homosexuality? And it was just Bible verses, no commentary, just scripture. And so we printed up, 12,000, and we went door to door and just handed out all the across the city. Well, we had a number on there, and we had 58 phone calls, very, very angry phone calls, people who were upset that we would even dare to address that issue. So we said, well, let's follow that up. Let's finish that with the idea of what does God say about adultery and fornication and immorality. And we printed 14,000 of those because we ran out, right? We didn't get the whole city covered. So we went across the city with what does God say about adultery. We got 3 phone calls, right? So it wasn't there was way, way more people involved with with immorality and adultery, but it wasn't a political issue. The homosexuality was political. And so there are still people who see us and hold that against us. And, you know, when you begin to speak up the truth, you know, there's people who don't come to our school anymore because, you know, divorce and remarriage and, what we, you know, the position that the Bible takes on that. And so, you know, there are some who, your question was, how did we get received?
Right? Yeah.
As long as we just smile and we're happy and we're cleaning up the neighborhood and we're having parties and block parties and those kind of things. Everybody's happy, but when we begin to preach on the street corners and do tract distributions and those kind of things, not everybody's happy.
Yeah, you're forcing them to confront what does the Bible say? And okay, so the Bible says this. I have to deal with that, and I think sometimes people don't like it.
That's right.
They would just be, I'd rather just live my life and not have to face these things. Just ignore them.
We wanted to build a French drain in our yard. And put it there between the church and the school, or between the church and our house. We put it in a parking lot, so we were building this French drain to drain it off. And we had 28 neighborhood children that were helping to move the dirt. It was a neighbor about five houses down that wanted to put it in a swimming pool. So they wanted all of our dirt to level off to make a swimming pool for their backyard. So wheelbarrows, skateboards, 5 gallon buckets, these children are all moving this dirt down there. They were having a fun time. So one of the children said, hey, I gotta call home, I gotta let my mom know. Where should I tell mom I'm at? And another child said, tell them you're at Mary Lost Park. So that was my wife. That was the first one we knew that that's what they called our yard. We had a little bit of a play area for our children and a jungle gym, and so they could climb on that, and they called it Mary Lost Park. So
that's pretty cool.
So there was you know, some of that goes on nicely.
So tell us about the different ways that you've been able to engage with this city. You've already went into some of those, but what are some projects you've done, and especially how were they received, maybe the difficulties you might have had, how did you overcome these, you know, especially since you have so much experience. You have been here a while, you know. Go into some of that.
Well, one of the things that we have in the city is tremendous fear of criminals. So when something goes wrong, nobody wants to be a snitch. Nobody wants to tell. We don't go out of the way to inform people, but we don't lie. And so when a police officer said, did you see something? The answer is yes. You know, this is what we saw. A lot of people are like, oh, don't say that, don't say that. Don't, you know. And so I think one of the things that we have, just as a good citizen, just as somebody who prays for the peace of the city, we recognize that they are ministers of good. And so we're going to inform the police if we see something or if we know something. We're not going to hide that information like many of the citizens around us do. We had across the street fire. It didn't affect our houses, but the ones right next door to us affected it. And then I read in the newspaper next day that the fire marshal ruled it arson. And so I looked at our security cameras, and you could see the three teenagers going into the house next door, the yard next door, and leaving. And about 5 minutes later, the fire truck's coming. And so I said, I called the police, and I said, I might have some information you would like to see on our security cameras. And they said, yes, yes. And so I saw this. Well, there would be people who would argue that if you're taking the side of the police or you're helping the police, that you're building walls and barriers against the criminals. Right? Those criminals now look at us as, oh boy, you know. But the landowners, the people who own those houses, who their lives were destroyed because of the arson, we tore down some walls by helping the police on that one. Right? And so which side are you going to be on? And if they have a job to do, and righteous people don't help them with their job, if we can. So that'd be one area we had gone. When they put that in the newspaper, the picture, one frame of these three guys walking, it was very obvious it was our house. It was mm-hmm. the teacher's house. It was the girl's house. It was their car. And so anybody who knows the neighborhood could know mm-hmm. who was working with the police on that one. Mm-hmm. That was Wednesday morning that was put out, and they're asking, anybody who knows these guys, please let us know. Mm-hmm. Well, Thursday night Bible school, we had a couple of the children who were acting rowdy, and so two of our staff members walked this child home, mm-hmm. and as they walked, they delivered the child, and they were coming back to school, they met three young men, perpendicularly, and they passed them, and about 25 feet beyond that, they turned around and shot at them. Mm-hmm. And the girl got three holes in her dress, right? Wow. And so the police, like, oh, I had nothing to do with the e-reporting. Yeah, it's like, well, I don't believe that, right? But I am. Mm-hmm. So we were at prison next week later, and I was, as soon as I walked in, the guy's like, oh, you're the guys with the camera. You're the guys that... well, thank you. That was my brother's house that burned, right?
Wow.
And so he was grateful for it. Well, I said, well, I have a question for you. Was that right for us as a church to have cameras? Because all mm-hmm. of a sudden there was this debate, you know. Mm-hmm. And, oh, no, you shouldn't have had cameras. I, oh, well. Then and so the prisoners mm-hmm. themselves were, some like, yeah, you should have
cameras. Interesting.
No. Uh-huh. And so I said, well, if it's right for us to have cameras, was it right for us to call the police? No. Pretty well universal, except for this one whose brother's house mm-hmm. burned. He was on our side the whole way. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I said, well, if we could have, most of them agree we could have cameras, but we shouldn't have called the police. I said, well, mm-hmm. then what do we do with that information, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you should have gone and talked to the guys. You should have just, but mm-hmm. I said, I don't know who they were, right? I didn't know who they were. What was I supposed to do? Well, then I said, I'll tell you another interesting part of this. I told mm-hmm. the prisoners that these, about this, two staff members getting shot at and the girl, and they almost came out of their seats, the whole thing. I was like, you need to run, you got to get out of town, man, you're high, your day is up, leave. And I said, but why? Greater is he that is in me than he is mm-hmm. in the world, all right? Mm-hmm. There's nothing going to happen to us unless God says, okay, I'm gonna lift a hedge, right? Mm-hmm. And so why do we run, right? Yeah. We're as secure as can be here. Is it dangerous? Yes. Have we been shot at? Yes. One day I came into school, and I'm coming the back door through the gym, and my teachers come running into the gym. They're shooting at us. Well, somebody shot three holes in our front window. And that particular, like in 6 months, we had 29 gun incidences in this neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, it gets scary. Yeah, there's times. Yeah, you think about it. You have children. But we have to remember the hedge of protection and the Job. Nothing could happen to Job unless God lifted the hedge. And and so you're safe and you're guarded and you're protected. And mm-hmm. I want to keep that there.
I think that's important to remember because one question I have then, like, what encouragements do you have for people watching this who may want to get involved in their own city or maybe move to a ministry in the city? Obviously, fear plays into a lot of this. You know, people are scared of some of the mm-hmm. things that happen in cities. Yeah, what would you say to encourage them?
Well, listen to the Pineapple Story series.
Okay. We'll put a link to that. Yeah that's
because
a good point.
Mm-hmm. Otto Koning, what a powerful, powerful testimony. Mm. Of he was over there with the headhunters. He was over there with the rattlesnakes and the poisonous whatever's. And nothing can happen to us. Job, read the book of Job. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a powerful house. One day I said, God, would you just show your power? I was laying in bed. I woke up and I said, just show your power. Lift the head just a little bit just so I can see your power. It was a stupid prayer. Never pray. don't do that. Yeah, night my son trips and falls and we had to go to the hospital.
Right? Wow.
So, no. Now I pray, dear God, make it higher. Make it wider.
Yeah.
You know. But Otto was such an encouragement to me. To recognize that I am safe when I'm in the midst of God's will, and wherever I'm at, there's nothing going to harm me. There's nothing going to get me. But yet there's so many times when I look back, so many times being here in this city, where I see God's power, God's protection, God's way. And I could go a long, long time telling you about many, many stories of God's protection. Mm-hmm. And I have hundreds of stories I don't even know about. Because I don't even know how many times God protected me. I wasn't aware of it.
Thanks for sharing those stories.
Thank you for having the opportunity.
Yeah, and for all the time you've put in here, and also I think the inspiration you've been to so many people. I know there's been a lot of volunteers come through here serving at your school and in your church. What you're doing here, I think that's really powerful. Really want these stories to get out there, so thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For more information about Anabaptist Perspectives, to read our blog, to donate, and to see videos of the conversations you hear on this podcast, visit AnabaptistPerspectives.org. We'd love to hear from our audience, so leave your feedback in the comments for this podcast or send us a message through our Facebook page. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Anabaptist Perspectives.
Thank you for listening to Anabaptist Perspectives. Your listening and sharing this with friends helps more people find our episodes. A special thanks to all of you who support Anabaptist Perspectives financially. We are here because of you. If you haven't had the chance to give yet this year, would you consider making a year-end donation? You can donate on our website or by check. Thank you so much for listening and supporting Anabaptist Perspectives. Thank you for joining us for this episode, and thanks to our donors and partners for making this possible. We publish essays on our website at AnabaptistPerspectives.org. We also release these essays in narrated form as their own podcast called Essays for King Jesus.